Hi everybody, this is Andy Norman from Defence Lab and you're listening to the Function vs Fiction podcast.
You're listening to the Function vs Fiction podcast, presented by Fortress Combat Arts, Bozeman, Montana.
What's going on, everybody? We're back for another episode of the Function vs. Fiction podcast from our new Fortress Underground Dungeon Studios. On the line, I have, we got John, but we got Greg and Andy Norman from Defense Lab, part two interview. Gentlemen, thanks again for staying with us here. How's everything going?
Everything's going really well over in Spain. Really good.
Wonderful, wonderful.
It's legendary, amigo.
Legendary, yes. Les, John, how you doing, buddy?
Awesome. I'm here ready to rock and roll.
Cool, cool. So where we left off, we kind of left off on a high note, but we were also talking a little bit about movies. It was a great story that Andy had mentioned about how we actually got into the movie business. But I did hear a little bit about some of the connections you might be having upcoming with Bollywood and Hong Kong and any other kind of movie affiliations. Greg, do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yes, of course. At the moment, as you know, Defense Lab has expanded pretty fast worldwide. We've been in Hollywood and now we're going to get into Bollywood. At the moment, we're training one of the lead actors back in England for this upcoming movie in Bollywood. And it's a very, very interesting project because at the same time, we're working with one of our best franchises in the UK. It's called Tahir. And on building and opening the same model that we are running in the UK, which is the franchise model for India. And then also we've got lots of connections in Hong Kong that are coming up. They are pretty, pretty interesting. But at the moment, we cannot say any names because it's not fixed yet.
Of course.
And you know, this industry moves pretty fast as well. But as soon as we can, we'll let you know and we'll give you all the names.
Wonderful. Yeah, please, please let the Function vs. Fiction podcast be the first to actually release that. That'd be awesome. But John, what was that movie that we were trying to pretend like we knew how to fight like the other day?
I don't know which was it the Vampire Diaries one?
Yeah, it was the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah,
the Jack Reacher.
Yes, yes, I love that. The 6-12 elbow that they were showing there. But Andy, I believe you mentioned during the break, you said had a couple little stories for us from that movie. Yeah. In particular. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a really quick rundown how that all came about. I was actually just on holiday in Spain down the coast and I got a telephone call on a Tuesday and it was from the offices in America, but it was just like, hey, Andy, Tom would like you to come out and work on this film.
Cruise.
For the weekend. And I was like, yeah, and okay. Yeah, Tom Cruise would like me to. And I was like, who is it? Who is it? And I thought somebody was just like setting me up as a joke. And they said, no, you know, Tom would like you to come out this weekend. I said, who is it? And then they just mentioned the name Paul Jennings. It was like, you know, Paul. And I was like, oh, my God. Right. So then I knew it was instantly real. So this is a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Long story short, by Friday, I'm in Los Angeles. And then walked into one of the massive studios that was actually empty. And there was all the stunt guys there, Paul Jennings and a few other people around. And then Tom walked in with the entourage. About 60 people and walked up to me, Paul Jennings. We all did our introductions and then Paul did a really sort of kind of nice friendly thing, which friends don't really do to each other really, but he did. And he just went, well, Andy, he just went, well, okay, now we've done introductions, over to you, Andy. Stood in front of Tom Cruise, the producers, the directors, all the entourage, all the stunt guys, and I had no idea I was just going to get dropped in that specific kind of scenario. So again, you know, quick thinking, I'm like, right. I said, okay, Tom, if you want to come over to the corner, I said, I've been having, you know, some obviously deep thoughts about, you know, what I think would be appropriate and some of the ideas I've been given and how to work on them. And I just said, rather than it being me just sort of, you know, talking or showing, let's do a participating presentation. So I've got the director there and Tom went, yeah, okay, cool. So he jumped up and I started actually training with him and walking and talking him through different things. Within 30 minutes, he was just totally and utterly like sold on the whole thing. And he just said a really beautiful personal thing to me, which obviously is something personal for me. But he just said, you know, I wish I had 6 months to take off work. He said, I would just love to do this, but, you know, obviously it'll never be. But for me personally, to hear somebody like Tom Cruise say that to me was just like, wow, just blew me away.
That is.
Anyway, that once, is. Oh no, it was amazing. It was amazing. I mean, he just went, this guy's, I just get this. This is so cool. This is so cool. And then as I'd finished the presentation, the director, Christian McCreary, he came up to me and he just went, he said, Andy, he said, I'd just like to congratulate. He said, really, really good presentation there. And it was all off the cuff. And none of it was planned. None of it was planned. I was just like, all I was thinking when they first dropped me into that position is obviously I was thinking, dope this one up, Andy. Just dope.
Yeah,
this,
right,
you know,
right,
yeah. Make sure you... And we did. As we finished the presentation, everybody then looked towards Tom and said, okay, Tom, what would you... What, you know, where do we want to go? What do you want to do next? And then obviously all the entourage moves with him. He said, I want to stay and train. I want to stay and train with all the guys. So we spent pretty much the next several hours... Immediately, this was the first day I arrived in LA.
Right, right.
Immediately, spending 5 hours, maybe five, potentially up towards 6 hours, just rehearsing that that 5-man fight that you see outside in the car park.
Right, right.
When he walks out the back.
Did this make you feel like a kid again? Doing this whole thing, very surreal. Sounds like it.
I mean, it's great because obviously people always ask me, "What's Tom Cruise like? You know, what's he like to work with?" As an actor, as a professional. Phenomenal. I mean, just talk about taking what he does seriously. Oh my God, just amazing. And trained really hard, massively respectful towards me. Whenever we did anything, he would always immediately look to me and say, Andy, what would you do? How would this work in the street? And then obviously would adapt things a little bit for the camera, sure. Or, you know, obviously to make it a little bit more screen fighting. But he treated me with the utmost of respect, so polite, so courteous with me. I had a wonderful time, and it's an incredible, you know, memory for me. And the other thing that's really beautiful is for my two boys,
right,
for them to look back in time is like, especially like my little one, my other one's a little bit older now, he's 14, but obviously when he was like 9 and 10, to go to school and go like, my dad trained Batman, he's like, yeah, of course he did. Yeah, I mean,
no, he really did.
It's like, yeah, of course he did. And then obviously when he was able to take the magazines and photographs and see things like all these things, like, oh my God, guy's dad trains Batman. He trained Batman.
So Andy was the real life Ra's al
Ghul. He was, yeah.
And then obviously now, awesome. You know, obviously both the boys know Tom Cruise's, and, you know, for them, it's just, so it's nice for them as well. It's not just about me, you know, it's an incredible thing to do, but it's nice for the company, for the people, for my children, you know, it touches a lot of people in a nice way.
It does. I can't tell you how many countless people say that, we didn't hear about you if you didn't get that little break in Hollywood. We don't hear, you know, because it was so difficult. Shoot, I heard about you guys in 07, 08, right around that time. And then I had to wait a year and a half to get somebody out here that knew how to train. That's where I met Brady and started doing all that stuff. So it's amazing how this kind of journey, your martial arts journey, has spun off. Yours, Grek's, all the original six. All you guys in at Defense Lab that kind of started this whole little tiny little butterfly effect all the way, kind of hit us out here in the States too. So, shoot, I mean, when I mentioned to John, when I met John at a co-op seminar, I mentioned what I trained in, and he goes, bullshit. And I'm like, no. So we started banging forearms. He's like, you want to come up and train? Okay, I'll teach you how to fight in the back of a pickup. He's like, no. Yeah. So anyway, John, what do you got?
Well, yeah, just that butterfly effect, that butterfly effect deal. When I met you at that co-op thing, it's interesting. You kind of start to go through life and you feel like, okay, the waves are pushing me in a certain direction.
Sure. They find you, right?
Yeah, they find you and you're like, that's the direction we're going in. And when I was coming out that way, I was already having something buzzing me, bugging me. We were in Vegas, but there was some reason I was like, I need to be out doing something over in the Sherman Oaks area. Don't know what, don't know why. And that wasn't lining up. And then I met you there. We got talking. We banged forearms. And lo and behold, you got
Koki Wong.
Koki. Yeah, you got Koki back in Sherman Oaks. I'm like, this is where I'm supposed to go. So we packed up after that seminar, drove that afternoon, and later that afternoon we were training. Oh. And it just spun off from there in a couple of different areas. But this has been a big thing to take back here to this Montana. Nobody's doing this here in Montana.
No.
Except maybe like in their own basement. But nobody's bringing this out on a platform for the public to showcase this, to utilize it, and definitely not at our level here where we've actually got the gym set up and people are coming in and utilizing this. So even you all the way out there, with, you know, being in England, Spain, and these other areas on the other side of the continent, up in a podunk area like Montana, you're reaching into these areas that you would never even imagine.
Right. And I don't want to point out something very similar. This is more directed toward you, Greg. I always, you know, when you hear martial arts, you hear techniques, content, everything, Andy, like you were talking about in the first episode. I never understood what the KFM was until I actually met you. You came out to my neck of the woods and you taught that class for all those people. And I said, oh, when you understand this is where something lives, that when you start with the fight, when you go, oh, this is what the Casey fighting method was at that time. This was, you're supposed to fight this way. You're supposed to fight with this intensity. We're not sitting here just dilly-dallying back and forth and doing all that other nonsense. So I attest to that, Greg. Yeah, that honestly, that day that you actually came out actually changed my life, because I was only doing it maybe once or twice a week. Then all of a sudden after that, I was spending 3, 4, 5 days a week. And because you were there, you had the rings on, you had everything. And you're like, you showed it in its native form. And once I understood that, that's how I took it. And that's how I showed John. That's how I showed his students. Shoot. Even the fact of training outside never really came into mind until the 2009, 2010, when I saw the videos. Andy, you're talking about, well, you're supposed to be outside. Why the heck aren't you training outside? Because that's where stuff happens, right? So, Greg, I leave that with you, because just like how Andy told his awesome story with about meeting Tom Cruise. Greg, obviously you're not Tom Cruise, but you're my guy. Like, we've been friends for quite a long time, and you actually showed me where it was born. And you know, those ripple effects really have affected this whole situation right there. So I'll leave you with a thought there.
Thanks a lot, Freddy, for that. And yes, one thing that we are known for is for reality. And everybody that we touch, they can see this on us, because that's where we live and that's where we come from. Andy, myself, just from the street, experience and testing it for real. And then when you test it like this, like John, you know, there is not too much bullshit, if you want, just on when you need to fight on the streets, which is very different from sport. We already say we love sport, but street is very different. So then when we go out and show these specific moves and everything, I think the one that people get the most or the fastest is the education of the instinct. And that's the point where we really make a dent inside the martial arts, because what we do is analyze ourselves as humans, sorry, and then take all these moves and turn them into attacks. Like we say, like when somebody has been attacked from several people, all we do is just curl or cover our hands, our head with the hands, and all this. So what we've done from there is analyze this and start developing a way of fighting with your elbows, a way of moving, and a way of feeling good in the middle of the chaos. And one of the genius part that Andy has just developed there in the program is deciphering the chaos. That's one of the main points that we teach to everybody. And that's where we put like 4 or 5 people and one in the middle. And then we just start learning from there all the moves and fights. But that's something that people pick because it's real. So when you fight with instinct or when you show it, you can see it in the eyes.
Right. I know we'll take the break right now, but I remember specifically, we'll get John. John, you can you can throw in real quick before we hit the break, was the fact that we get countless people that kind of come into the gym and, oh yeah, I want to do this. Or that, and then they show it to them. And they might be good sport fighters, hopping around, moving around. And the second you kind of either enclose them with one method, maybe you put them in a corner with some concrete walls, you take away the movement. Or two, you put somebody behind them. And then all of a sudden it turns into, oh wait, I can't do my moves because there's somebody behind me. I'm not going to be allowed to do my moves. John, I mean, we've had a couple guys come in there. The second we do that, they change the ball game for them right there.
Yeah, it's taken away that optimal. You know, we're putting you in the situation, and now it is the defense thing where it's not on your terms. It's on the Predator's terms.
Right.
And how do you react to that? And everybody wants to hem and haw and kind of make up excuses. But, you know, when you're laying on the sidewalk and you're bleeding, there's no excuses. You just didn't have an answer.
You did or you didn't.
So
right?
This, yeah, you did or you didn't. And this paradigm that, you know, when you're adding that pressure with this type of training, it's what I was talking about. It fills in a lot of blanks. It fills in that area like, okay, you're getting crashed on. Now with this defense lab material, you've got a way to get to those other type of weapons. And who knows, with these type of blocks, these type of shells, the way that this D-Lab stuff is utilized, just the nature of you protecting yourself is going to be that damaging agent to that other person, where they're going to be like, you know what, maybe continuing this onslaught isn't worthwhile because I'm taking damage just trying to hurt this person.
Redefining predator and prey. Right on. So we're going to take a break right here. We'll be back. You've been listening to the Function versus Fiction podcast.
The Function versus Fiction podcast welcomes our very special guests, Andy Norman and Greg, co-founders of Defense Lab. Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, like, and subscribe. July is the month for Defense Lab Summer Camp 2019. July 26th through the 29th in beautiful Todesacunto, Spain. Keep an eye on @DefenseLab on Instagram and Facebook for more. To find out more about Defense Lab or locate a lab near you, visit www.defenselab.com. The Function versus Fiction podcast thanks you for tuning in. Don't forget, audio version available at stitcher.functionversusfiction.com. Video at www.functionversusfiction.com. Be sure to like and subscribe. Back to the show.
And we're back. You're listening to the Function versus Fiction podcast. This is our second half with Andy and Greg from Defense Lab. Andy, Stormin, Norman, and Greg, thanks again for being on. So, Andy, we were talking about that during the break. You want to piggyback on what we were just mentioning on the first segment there?
Yeah. One of the things that I think is really, really sad in our global community is the way that all the different styles still bicker and fight amongst themselves when, in truth, they're all in search of the same kind of destiny to try and understand what is. We spoke briefly before about, you know, taking the attributes from all the other different incredible arts, which I think is totally valid. And we need to do that. I think too many, especially self-defense, too many self-defense teachers talk badly of, you know, sport like BJJ and go, yeah, but it's, you know, it's only a sport with one man on a mat. And then there's just really simple questions we pose to people. It's like, well, if you're on the ground, obviously it's not good. But if you're on the ground and you can't do anything, you're dead. And if you're on the ground and you can do something, you go, maybe. So is it worth having some attributes from a sport or not? Of course it is. Boxing's a sport. They put hand wraps and boxing gloves on. They've got a ring. They've got a referee. They've got doctors. They've got, you know,
right.
A time limit. Yeah, but the attribute is, well, of course you want to have the ability for distance, rhythm, timing. And the other thing, you know, to be able to punch people in the face really hard, because I don't know how many people can sort of associate with me, but there's so many people out there training lots and lots of, like counterwork with punches, for example. But the punches are all falling 1 foot short of the opponent's face. So, you know, they go parry, parry, and then do these like really, really fast, you know, counter things. But it's all in false distance and time. They're not taking the real attribute. So I think there's a lot to be said for, we're all trying to seek the same thing. And between the arts, just don't badmouth each other as much. Just go and look up. There's some great guys out there. We all know there's some rubbish. I mean, the martial art community always picks up on the negativity, sadly, and goes, oh, you know, the dojos and all the bad things. And I agree. There's some bad out there, just like there's bad builders and there's bad plumbers and there's bad mechanics. You know, there's bad martial art teachers, but there's an awful lot of really good guys out there as well. Things, and they've got great attitudes as well. And we just constantly try with our message when we're out on the circuit, you know, to promote this as well. It's like, guys, whatever you've done, it's awesome. I mean, if you come from wrestling, I mean, they're beasts, you know. I mean, if you put your hand on a wrestler and you don't know he's a wrestler, it'd be the last thing you ever do.
right.
Yeah, no, but it will, you know. So you know that, guys. It's really, right. You know, if you put your hands on anybody and you don't know who they are and what they're capable of doing, and you're just slightly arrogant or a little bit overconfident, confident. I mean, you're going to wake up in a hospital bed. Right. So, you know, back to this style versus style. It's, you know, we're all seeking the same answer. To study what isn't, it'd just be nice if the community start taking it on board a little bit more and just look at people in a more positive light than always, you know, a really negative light, which is a sad part in the industry for me personally.
No, I get that. I get that. John, you want to piggyback?
I think that's a interesting area, and that's an area of maturity. What we find in the training world is people get into it and they're, it's like children. We see that we see kids, they start to learn something, they start to get older, and all of a sudden they think they know a lot more than they think they know. And you see that in the martial arts world also. You see it in the shooting industry, and people have different methodologies. And in the shooting industries here in the States, you've got your competition end, you've got your tactical special, in the tactical breaks into tendrils. You've got those, you know, law enforcement tactical, then you've got the special forces tactical. And everybody's got something to dog on somebody else. But the bottom line is, if you're a really good performance shooter, like a competition shooter, it never fails. You take the good sport shooter and you put them into tactical situations or tactical training. They always surpass the people that don't train to those levels of like the performance.
Right, right.
And why is that? It's because they've perfected those fundamentals. They've perfected certain levels of techniques. And that's why it's so dangerous. If you take somebody that is a grappler, a sport grappler, and you put them into a street context, and they have that attitude, they have that mindset, they can go in and adjust to the street situation. They're deadly. I mean, I'm getting videos back where I'm seeing these guys that are grapplers. They're doing kimuras on people, breaking people's humerus. I've seen people doing heel hooks on people, blowing their knees out in street situations.
Could I jump in there, please, John?
Yeah.
Could I jump in there? Just touching on that point you make in there. And this is where I think people really, you know, misunderstand as well. And sadly, it's from generally our side, the self-defense communities, as opposed to the sport community. But let's take a BJJ guy. He's going to be probably really fit, really strong. And yes, he puts a gi on, and yes, he steps onto a mat with another man and grapples under. Well, let's take him off the mat and just put him in a pub. It's not stupid, is he? He's still capable of spitting in your face, kicking you in the bollocks, hitting you with a bottle, stabbing you in the throat. Just because they do sport doesn't mean they say they're stupid in the street. You know, too many people go, yeah, but it's just a sport. Yeah, but take him off the mat and put him outside. He's a big, tough, badass guy that can, like, move and grab, throw, hit, punch, kick, spit, the same as everybody else. Just because you train sport doesn't mean to say your brain lives in the sport. It just means you step onto that mat and compete under them certain set of rules for that 30 minutes or whatever it be. But you go and put that guy in the pub. I know back in the UK when I was a young kid, a really young kid, training in karate when I was like 8, 9, and 10 years old, and there's a guy, Terry O'Neill, is one of the famous karatekas from the UK. I mean, he was a machine. If the guy did ballet dancing, he would have killed everybody. I mean, he was just a machine, absolute monster. So I think you must also, or people must also, never neglect the fact that, yes, a sports person operates under a certain set of rules, yeah, in their environment, but in the street, he's just as capable of sticking his thumb in your eye as you are. He's just as capable of grabbing your body. You go, oh, yeah, because I'll just grab him by the bollocks and I'll just do this. I'll just stamp on his ankle. Well, he can stamp on your ankle as well.
Right.
So I think that's a part where the self-defense community needs to have, you know, definitely a greater added value towards, you know, combat sports. Yes, it's a sport, but when they're in the pub, they're the same as you, with more attributes and probably a higher level of fitness,
yeah,
and a brain. Yeah, so right. You go, you know, never underestimate, you know, right, just because something is a sport. And I feel very strongly about that.
Often overlooked, definitely. John?
No, 100% agree. I mean, especially when you talk about contact sports, the naturally trained boxer, I do believe, yeah, Jeff Thompson, really admired him, used a lot of his material. His material really evolved me to where I've gotten to. And the guy had a very strong boxing foundation. And when I described to my students, when they want to start talking about self-defense, they're like, well, why do you spend so much time just working on boxing? I was like, well, when you look at stuff go down on all the CCTV stuff and all the street fight stuff, people aren't doing moves. It's generally falling into this broken down version of really ugly boxing or really ugly grappling. So we exist and we build our foundations in those places. And the bottom line is, you knock somebody out, you just knock somebody out. And when they get into those situations, you get a lot of the headhunting that's already happening. There's not a lot of technicality to it. People are throwing bombs. And even the Gracies say it in some of their combatives jiu-jitsu stuff. They say, we're not boxers. That's why we crush distance, because we know how dangerous that distance is, and just one shot can end the fight.
Sure, sure.
So bringing those realities of like what actually goes down is worthwhile, and understanding that these are people that, if they're sport people, doesn't necessarily matter that they work in a sport paradigm. That what matters is they do it at 100%. So they learn how to take shots at 100% and give them at 100%. And these grapplers, they're getting choked at 100%.
Yeah. There's no standing at eight count for a choke. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah. So
I remember my early days when I started traveling to Los Angeles in the 90s, when the Machado brothers and all the Gracie just basically first hit the United States of America. And I was exposed to the BJJ by, he's called Chris Houghton, and he's one of the original Dirty Dozen. He was the first, he was one of the first 12 non-Brazilian black belts in the States. And I remember my first visit down to the Machado school. It was Higgins School. And it was when the Brazilians were still kind of like making a statement in Los Angeles. Now I jumped in the class, and fortunately, I'd already made like quite good friends with Higgin. He was like, hey, this is my friend from Europe, la, 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 la. And I just remember standing on the mat, and he said, my friend from Europe like wants to, you know, train and fight with all you guys. And we all had a laugh and a joke. And then he just said to me, yeah, exactly. And he said, pick one. So I looked along this wall of guys, and they're all like the Hulk, every one of them. So I pointed at one guy, and he came out into the middle of the mat, and he just smashed me into the mat. I was like, wow, yeah. And then I thought that was it. And Higgin went, pick another. I was like, are you serious? Are you serious? And he made me fight the entire line of guys. So smashed in my life. They were monsters. And that's, you know, again, when I just had such an admiration for, you know, that the BJJ when it first hit the States, because even I didn't really quite understand exactly what it was in the early days, like most people didn't. Thought, oh, and what an experience. I mean, just phenomenal. You know, again, great memories for me back in them days, but I got absolutely smashed.
right. And I've been to that school, and that wall, if you're saying the wall is full of people, that's a very long wall to have to go through all that stuff. Goodness.
Yes, it is. It is.
Well, good deal. So we're going to change it up, segue a little bit over here. We'll talk about a little bit now what talk about the evolution. We talked about the martial arts. Let's talk about the business aspect of Defense Lab. Greg, I'll direct this to you right now with training up your guys, not just sending them out with instructor certification, doing this and that. You talk a little bit about how you're actually educating your franchises and your affiliates out here in the States. Oh, that's
yes.
For Greg.
Thank you, Freddy. Sorry, just couldn't hear very well now, yes. So, yes, we have a differentiation. We have two lines in Defense Lab. One is what we call the instructor license, which we sell globally, worldwide, where instructors and people all over the world, they can buy this license. They get into the instructor portal. It's an online portal. We have all the videos, curriculums, manuals, and everything for them there. And then also we have a line that we call the franchise. So the franchise is established in the UK and is one of our best business models that we got for the instructors, because we not only teach them on product knowledge, but we teach them the business aspects of how to run the school, how to teach, how to get new students, ways of expanding the brand themselves, and we spend a lot of time with them, just educating them. We have three or four times a year where we go physically to the UK, and we teach them on both of the aspects, like business and physical.
Cool.
I'd just like to throw a few words in there as well, please.
Please,
Freddy.
Please.
Just on this education, we all know about how people say, you know, if you love what you do, you never do a day's work in your life. And we all know so many martial artists out there that are really good, yet obviously they're still working in factories or doing day jobs because they're not able to make a living from what they love. So one of our goals was to try and change this and educate people. And then obviously when people start becoming successful, the first thing that people do is obviously hate on you and become really bitter and jealous and speak badly of you.
Sure.
And then start calling you Matt Dojo. Now, I always put an answer back to people. I'm back from one of the monetary collection agencies in the United States of America many, many years ago. I used to get the reports of what the schools used to earn every month. And one of the reports in there was from the Henzo Gracie Jiu-Jitsu School. And I think we're going back, I mean, maybe, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 years ago. And I won't say the exact amount, but it was way in excess of $100,000 a month, way in excess of. Do we think Henzo Gracie is a McDojo?
Absolutely,
I think not.
Right.
So just because somebody runs a successful school doesn't mean to say they're a sellout. And again, you know, it's a controversial subject, but yes, there are McDojos out there that do unethical things, but there are also an awful lot of fantastic schools that do extremely well that are not McDojos. Because if we think about it sensibly, if you have, for example, 300 students and they all stay and they all love what you're doing and they're happy to pay monthly, you must be doing something right to keep 300 people happy, because you can't deceive everybody. And not everybody's stupid. If they don't like you, they don't like what you're doing, or they think you're unethical, or they think your training's rubbish, they'll simply leave. So again, I think it's something really important to understand about when we talk about educating martial artists. It's not turning them into McDojos and you go, oh, now you teach business, so now it's going to be a McDojo. It's like, no, we're going to teach people actually how to pay their mortgage and look after their family and feed their children and buy their car and live a life from something they love doing that they didn't know how to do before. I call that intelligent, not a McDojo. I call that being really smart, because you can make great money from something you love doing.
Sure.
And again, I think this is a point that we really try to emphasize when we travel the world is, you know, guys, be smart. If you're a process, you are able to do this. Most people are so passionate about the martial art and they give 0% to the study of business. It's like, you know, hey guys, how many business books have you read? No.
Sure. Right.
You know, how much you know about anything to do with just, you know, selling a product? Nothing. You go, well, your answer's probably going to be the same, then not much. If you just learn a little bit, you'd be surprised how your school will grow. And you don't need to be the best business guy in the world. You just need to apply yourself a little bit. And being successful doesn't mean to say you're a McDojo.
Yeah, no, I would concur. I mean, shoot, that was an excellent example with Henzo Gracie, because we all know his training, his jiu-jitsu is obviously arguably second to none. And you keep 400 people happy coming in and out. Shoot, even yearly. I mean, John, and we can barely keep three people happy because we get this, we get that. I'm like, you know, we're trying to offer a product that covers all the bases and does this and that. But at Fortress, you know, nobody does what John does out in the Bozeman, Montana area. And you still get people to come in, well, what about this or this? It's like, just come out and train, for crying out loud. All questions will be answered as you go about the business. John?
Well, first off, I gotta admit that I'm absolutely guilty of not having studied the business portion better. And I think after, I don't know, since 2013, I've had this school set. It's just, you know, working odds and ends, extra jobs here and there. And even though the martial arts aspect is full-time, nothing shorter than full-time, I got to do overtime doing other jobs just to make sure I'm getting paid. So I think that's an area and an aspect that a lot of people figure like, well, if I just learn stuff, then people will want it. Well, you got to make them want it.
Right.
They don't want it just because. I mean, they do want it, but there's going to be something to get through also. There's another filter to get through that you actually have to convince them that that's the thing that they want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there we have it, everybody. We really do appreciate the fact that Andy and Greg could actually make the time. So before we go the send off here, Andy, this is the Andy Norman show for the next minute or so. So we're going to hit this. Like I said, we did this with Greg at the end of the first part one of this episode. So Andy, are you ready? We're going to do 20 questions in 60 seconds. Now, the reason why we're doing this is because these guys are very mysterious in our neck of the woods. So we're kind of throwing these out there so people can actually get a chance to hear some of the wackiness that might be there, because we're all human. We're all average Joes. I'd love to be able to grab a couple pints with you guys whenever I get out across the pond for that. But Andy, are you ready, sir?
I'm ready.
Right on. We're going to go. I'm going to do it in reverse order on my list here. So I'm going to set the timer. Yeah.
Okay.
Here we go.
Here we go.
And we're on 60 seconds with Andy Norman. Favorite attack move, quote unquote attack move, in Defense Lab KFM?
Tip one, defense in attack.
Wonderful. Biggest martial arts influence, personally, you knew growing up?
Bob Breen.
Right on. Surf or snowboard?
Snowboard.
Islands or mountains?
Islands.
Favorite hero in the Marvel Universe?
Hulk.
Favorite comic book hero in the DC Universe, but you can't choose Batman?
That's got to be Wonder Woman then.
All right. Favorite type of firearm that you've had the chance to shoot?
Definitely a Magnum 44.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. And we'll go karaoke, yes or no?
Definitely not.
And one more question. Favorite beer or mixed drink?
The same as Greg, a good old Maestra, which is the best beer in Spain.
Right on. Sounds like we're getting a kickback, I hope, too. Send a case out this way. So there we have it, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, 20 questions in roughly 60 seconds with Andy Norman and Greg. Gentlemen, it's been an honor. I'm glad we were able to schedule this out. And we really do appreciate what you guys done, sending that butterfly effect out here to help us out on our martial arts journeys. So with that, we'll bid you guys adieu. You've been listening to the Function versus Fiction podcast. Thanks again, Defense Lab, Andy, Greg. We'll catch you guys on the next one.
You just heard the Function versus Fiction podcast, presented by Fortress Combat Arts. Be sure to visit us at fortresscombat.com and check us out on Facebook. We'll catch you on the next one.
The opinions expressed on this show are that of the hosts and the hosts only. We hope no egos were harmed in the process. Any mention of a brand, system, or label is not necessarily an endorsement by the hosts.
That's all I got.